top of Kuf Ches Amid Aleph, and we're up to Masiv Rav Oshi on the second line. You may remember that the last thing we studied yesterday was a position of Abaye, that you could be chayav for Meleches Kotzer, which means reaping, if you remove Pitra Meuna Dechatzva. There's something that grows on a pitcher, on a kli, on a utensil. And that which grows on a utensil, if you uproot it, then you're chayev for meleches kotzer. Masiv Rav Oshia hatolish mi otzitz nokiv chayev, but she'eno nokiv patur. So if you're growing something in a flower pot called an otzitz, it depends. If you cut it off, that which is growing there, and it's perforated on the bottom, so it means it's connected to the karka, that which is growing from the karka lends itself to the malacha of oker dover migidulo, of uprooting it. But if it's sheino nokuv, if it's absolutely closed on the bottom, there are no holes, so then even though it's growing in the flower pot, you're not chayev for meleches kotzer when you cut it off from its growth from the flower pot, because you need something that's attached to the ground. So then how could Abaye claim that you're chayev for cutting out this fungus that's growing on a pitcher? Hasam lav hainu ravisa. Hacha hainu ravisa. It really depends upon where a plant normally grows. In a case of a plant that grows on the outside of a pitcher, that's considered something that's normal. It grows there in normal situations. That's the way these fungus grow. But in the case of something that usually is grown, planted in the ground, and instead he plants it in a flower pot, that's unusual. And since it's not directly being nourished from the karka, because it's an otzit she'eino nokiv, it's closed on the bottom, therefore he is potter, because that's not considered rabisa. Rabisa means the normal place where it grows. Now we get back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that chaya v'of, if you have different kinds of animals, chaya is usually an undomesticated animal, or an of, and the question is whether or not you're chayev for meleches chovel, which means, we said that with regard to the eight categories of shrotzim, of crawling creatures, what was common to all of them is that they have a skin, and therefore if you give them a bang on the skin, you're chayev mishum meleches chovel. And that is true for chayev yof as well, because they have an R, they all have a skin. So you chayev mishum chovel if you injure them. And the Mishnah says that whether or not you chayev mishum tzedah, if you capture them, that depends upon whether or not it's birshuso. If you have something that's under in your domain, then it's domesticated. Usually a chay is not domesticated, but if you were able to domesticate it, then you would not be chayev mishum tzedah. Now the Gemara wants to know if we assume, based on our Mishnah, that the status of chayev yof is that they have an R, they have hides, then can we use these hides for tefillin? And tefillin have to be written on a parchment which is made from the hide of a kosher animal, as we'll soon see. Amar Avhuna, Kosvin Tfilin al Gabi Or Shel Or Tahar. If you have a kosher bird, you could actually take the skin off the bird, and you could make parchment out of it and write tefillin on it. Amar Rav Yosef, Maika Mashmala Disley Or. You, Rav Huna, trying to tell me a chiddush, that what? That a bird has an Or, and the halacha validates the R, so the tefillin can be written on the cloth that's made from the R of a bird. Tanina, we have it in our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Achovu ben chayev. And the only reason you chayev from Leches Chabola is because it has an R. So why did Rav Huna have to add this chiddush that's implicit, at least in the Mishnah. Amar Le Abaye, Abaye says, Tuvo Kamashbal on Rav Huna is teaching us a great chiddush. To Imi Masnisen, if I only had a Mishnah, as far as Meleches Chovil is concerned, Hava, I mean, I would have said that a bird does not have a hide, but came into Ispe Nikve, Lo. I'm sorry. What I meant to say is that although a bird has a hide, and that's why you chayv mishum chovel, but that R is not enough for tefillin. Why? Because in the case of tefillin, we need to write a ksav, and the osios have to be clear. But in the case of the R, the skin of a bird, it's nikve. It has many cracks and crevices in it. And therefore, you cannot really write properly on the hide of a bird. Kamash Malon, so Rav Huna wants to teach us, no, that the hide of a bird is valid for tefillin. Ki da'amri b'marova called nekev shadio verisalov, eno nekev. Again, explaining the Hava Mina, based on a statement that we got from Eretz Yisrael, that if you have a hole and the dio will get stuck, it'll, you know, when you pour the ink, it falls into the hole, and you won't be able to write a letter in a flowing way because part of the ink is going to fall into the hole, then it's not considered kosher for tefillin. And we would think, therefore, that in the case of the hide of an oaf, of a bird, since it does have these cracks and crevices in it, then likewise the ink is going to fall into the cracks and crevices, and you won't be able to write a letter that goes from one side of the letter to the other side of the letter, because part of the ink is going to fall into the hole. And that's the Chiddush of Huna, that you can use the hide of a bird for tefillin, for tefillin, because although it has cracks and crevices, it's not, as we call it, a nekev shadyo, a na overes olav, but rather it's a nekev shadyo overes olav. And the dyo will be able to, shall we say, continue from one side of the letter to the other, even on the or of an oaf. Meisvei Rabbi Zera, the Brisa says, B'knafav. Now we're talking about the parish of Karban Olah. And in the parish of Karban Olah, we have two categories of an Olah. We have one category which is called an Olas Behema, which is brought from a Behema. And we have an Olas Ha'of. And in the parish of Olas Ha'of, we have a pasuk that says, B'knafav. That when we put the bird, the Olas Ha'of, onto the Mizbeach, and we burn it, because, as you know, an Ola is kulo kol, it's completely burnt on the Mizbeach. We burn it together with its feathers. And what's the Chiddush over here? So the Braisa derives from this principle that Lahachshir Sa'of, S-A-R, that you can burn the Ola of a bird together with its R, with its skin. The isal kedaitach arhu, if you're telling me that a bird has a skin, is hechi marbile kra. How do you see in this pasuk that the Torah is adding the hide or the skin of the bird? Maybe you have to remove it, and we would think that just like in the case of olas habehema, you have to remove the R, because in Olas Behema we don't burn the animal with its hide on the Mizbeach. We only burn the flesh of the animal. And if you're telling me now that in the case of an oaf it likewise has an R, then how could it possibly be that Olas Ha'of would be burnt with its R? It should have the same din as Olas Behema, just to the same extent that a Behema has an R. and therefore you don't burn the or on the Mizbeach in the case of Olas HaBehema. So too, a bird has an or, and we should not be burning an Olas HaOf with its or. And yet here the Brisa says, Lahakshiras or, Omale Abaye, or Huv Rachmana Rabye. You're right. If we didn't have the special ribui, the inclusion of Beknofov, if we have left ourselves to logic alone, we would have assumed an analogy between Olas HaOf and Olas Behema. And just like in Olas Behema, we don't burn the R on the Mizbeach, so to an Olas HaOr, Olas HaOf, since it has an R. We don't burn the R on the Mizbeach. Kamash Malon, the Torah tells me, with Knafav, as a separate ribui, that Olas HaOf is different than Olas Behema. And in the case of Olas HaOf, we burn the Ola with the bird whole, meaning even with its skin. Ikid Yamri, the Gemara offers another transmission of the same halacha, and the second transmission is almost identical to the first, just a different method or sequence to come to the same conclusion. Omrabi Zera Afanantanami Tnina. I also derived Rav Huna's conclusion that tefillin could be written on the R of an Oaf from the following brisa, Biknafav, L'rabos es ha'or, that in the case of an Olas ha'of, we burn even the skin of the bird, Iyamet Bishlema R, who, if you're going to tell me that it is an R, and that's why it's kosher for tefillin, Hainu Ditzrich Krol Rabuye. Now I understand why the Bryson needed a special ribui from the word of Biknafav to include the R. Because if not for that special ribui, we would have excluded the R from the Mizbeach, just like in the case of Olas Behema. El-i-amit lav arhu, if you would say that in all dinim of the Torah, this R of an oaf is not considered R, and therefore be possible for tefillin, is amai yitzur krol rabuye. Why do I need a pasuk to include it? If it's not R, then it's part of the oaf itself, and it's not a separate R. And it doesn't have the problem of Or Behema, Or Behemoth, although it cannot be burnt on this Behemoth, but this is not an Or. The answer is it must be an Or. And since it's an Or, that's why I need a special pasuk to teach me that you burn it on the Mizbeach. Omalei Abaye, Liola Memelech, I could argue the opposite. Lav Orhu. The status of the skin of a bird is not that of an Or, and it cannot be kosher for tefillin. But I still need a pasuk to tell me that you burn the R of an oaf on the Mizbeach. Salkat, I mean, I would have thought, Kevin, the Isbe Pirtse Pirtse, since a bird's skin is full of holes, mois, it's disgusting. It's something that is not appropriate for the Mizbeach. Kamash Malon, that's what this pasuk teaches me, that even though it doesn't have the status of an R, but nevertheless, I should have excluded it because of Pirtse Pirtse. It has all these crevices that we spoke about earlier, and therefore, it's not something that's appropriate for the Mizbeach, Kamash Malon. Therefore, we need the word Ubiknafav to include the R of an Oaf that it's burnt on the Mizbeach, and in the case of an Olas Oaf. Boy, mine, Mar Breid Ravina Merav Nachbar Yitzchak, Mao Lichtov, question. Are you allowed to write tefillin al gabi or shel dag tohar? In other words, does the skin of a fish, obviously it has to be a kosher fish, have the status of or, it's considered or, and therefore I can write tefillin on it? Omar lo, so he gets a response from Rav Nachman Yitzchak, im yov elio viyomar. Only when elio comes, he'll be able to tell us. My, what does he mean with this cryptic response, im yov elio viyomar? E lema, if you're going to tell me that elio is going to tell me e isle or e lesle or, does a fish have a skin or not? Hochazinen disle or. If you have eyes in your head, then you can see that a fish has a skin. Viyodin, furthermore, hotnan, we have a Mishnah in Kalim, and the Mishnah says that atzamos hadag vioro matzilin vioelames, that the R of a fish will save things from becoming tame, and that's called hatzola vioelames. So you have a corpse in a room or a house or a tent, and the items, whether food or kelim, that are under the same roof as the corpse will be contaminated. But there's something called hatsola, that if you have something that's inside the oil of the mess, but it's concealed, it's closed off, then it doesn't become tameh. And the question is, what's the status of the skin of fish? If you cover something inside the oil of mess with the skin of fish, does it have the status of ar, which is something that blocks the tumah, or is it susceptible to tumah? The Mishnah tells us in Masechta Kelim that the skin of a fish has the status of ar, and therefore it protects something from receiving tumah. So what does Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok mean when he says Eliyahu is going to teach it to us? Ela, but rather, im yov Eliyahu v'yomar, zuam aminei, ilo paska zuam aminei, I paska zuam aminei, ilo paska zuam aminei. What's different about the R of an animal, or the R of an oaf on the one side, as opposed to the R of a fish on the other side, is that the R of a fish, with the passage of time, has a putrid smell to it. And we're not going to allow tefillin on something that has a putrid smell to it. And that's called zuama. And we're going to need Eliyahu HaNavi to tell us exactly how bad is bad, if you follow what I mean. You know, it's at what point shall we say that the fish, or in this case the skin of the fish, is so smelly that it cannot be used for tefillin. Tefillin has to be something that's proper, that comes in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam with that tefillin on our head, and something that's zuama, that has this stench, is not appropriate. And it cannot be used for writing parchment. Nobody should be wearing smelly tefillin. So the question is, at what point have we processed the R of a fish to the extent to which it no longer has that putrid smell? That's what we need Eliyahu for. So again, Eliyahu is not going to teach us a new halacha about the status of the R of a fish. We know from the halacha, from sources, that the R of a fish is considered an R, and therefore for sure it would be kosher for tefillin, but we need Eliyahu to tell us whether you can write tefillin, at what point does the R of the fish, it's free from that stench. Shmuel v'Karna, oh boy. All right. So Rabosai, we're about to learn a particularly painful Gemara for me anyway. Shmuel and Karna. Karna was the name of one of Shmuel's great colleagues, and they were in Bavel, and Haviyasvi Aguda Dinahar Malka, they were sitting on the shores, on the bank of a river which is called Nar Malka. This is the Euphrates River, and Chazinon Lamaya de Kadolu Viavire. They saw that the water of the river was very agitated. It was rising and falling. Amalei Shmuel Lakarna, Shmuel with his holy spirit, almost like a prophet, he turns to Karna and he says, Gavra Rabba Ka'asi Mimarava. There's a great man who is arriving from Eretz Yisrael here to Bavel. So let me say a few words. Rav, who was Shmuel's colleague Rav originally was a colleague of Rav Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael, and later in his life, he went to Bavel, and he became one of the pyramids of Torah, one of the pillars of Torah in Bavel, and he became a great colleague and a chaver of Shmuel. And on the occasion in which Rav made that trek from Eretz Yisrael over the river to come to Bavel, the waters were rising in his honor. So Shmuel wants to tell Karna that we're about to encounter a great man. But the river is not only rising, but it's also turbid. It's also, you know, turning over and over and over. It's wild. And therefore, Shmuel says, V'chayish b'mei eha. And he must be suffering from some revolutions in his stomach. And that means that probably his food did not digest properly. All this Shmuel knows by looking at the river, could you imagine? The kadolu maya lakbule ape kame, and the water is rising to greet him. And I want you to go and figure this man out. You go ahead of me, Zeal, and toy le akankana, figure him out. That's an idiomatic phrase. Sniff his keg. Find out if he's a true Torah scholar. So now Karna is sent on a mission, and we'll soon see that Rav was pretty upset about this because he was in pain, he was really suffering, and he needed to take care of himself very quickly, but they were going to hold him up. And we're not exactly sure why they would do such a thing, but in any event, Azil Ashkhe l'Rav. So Karna confronts Rav, and Karna doesn't know beans about Rav. All he knows is that Shmuel sent him on this mission to check him out. So he starts asking him questions, one question after the other. You can imagine that Rav is biting his lip. You know, he's in such pain from the revolutions in his stomach. Amalei, the first question Karna asks him is, Minayin shein kosvin tefillin ela gabi or behema tahora? How do we know that only the hide of a kosher animal is qualifies for writing tefillin? Amalei, Rav quotes the pasuk, Dechsiv, it says in Shmos, Lamantia, in the parasha tefillin, Lamantia Torah Hashem beficha, that the Torah that's written on the cloth, on the parchment of tefillin, should be beficha, it should be in your mouth. And what is the extra word beficha? Says Rav, min amutar beficha, from that which you're allowed to eat. So then he asks him question number two. This is Karna firing away questions to Rav. Minayin l'dam shu adam. A woman could have various kinds discharges, and how do we know that the discharge, which is identified as nida, and is metame or betumis nida, is red in color? There are many, many other discharges that have many other colors. And Rav quotes a pasuk in Malachim, and it says there, Malachim shenemar, vayiru moav mineged esamayim adumim kadam. The Moabites saw the water from afar, it appeared red like blood. So we see that blood is considered something that's red. Now the next question is really wild. Minayin lemila shebaoso makom. Karna is asking, how do we know that the male member is the place for circumcision? And Rav takes this question very seriously. It was not facetious. And he says, Nema kan or loso, the Torah with regard to mila, tells you that you should cut off your arla. Notice that the word arla so is in possessive, arla so. V'nemar lahalon, later on in Vayikra, tells us in the Parashah of Kedoshim, arla so, that you have an iser arla with regard to the fruits that come from a newly planted tree. Malahalon, just like in the case of arla that grows from the ground. Dover sha'osa pri, it has to be something that produces fruit. If it's a what's called an ilan srak, then obviously it's not part of orla if it can't produce fruit. Afkan, dovar, here too in mila, the Torah requires dovar sha'osa pri. You know, something which is responsible for procreation. So Karna doesn't like this answer. He says, emo libo. Now again, I'm not a cardiologist. I just don't know exactly how you would cut away at the skin, the membrane that covers the heart. I don't know. That's, boy, that's invasive surgery. I don't know. I can't believe that. But anyway, he takes this seriously, Karna. And the Sivi quotes a pasuk in which the Navi warns the Jews, no, this is actually still in Chumash, Umaltem es orlas levavchem. So you see that the levav, the heart of a person, also has an orla. And he goes on and asks him another question. Ema ozno. I'm going to quote to you a pasuk in Yirmiyahu HaNavi. He calls the ozen, the ear, a part of the ear has the ksiv hine orla ozno. Now, I can't explain to you biologically, but I can tell you on a philosophical level, probably karna means to say that it's one thing to upgrade your, you know, the area of your body, the member of your body, because of many different temptations you might have, but we need something even more far-reaching. You know, the lave of a person, the heart of a person could be tempted to all sorts of different kinds of taivas and sins. The ozen wants to hear all sorts of things that it shouldn't be hearing. Anyway, Rav's answer to Arlo, to Karna was, Donin Arloso Tama, Me Arloso Tama. Tama means it's complete because it has an extra vav in it. So in both the parsha of Mila and in the parsha of Arlo, which grows the first 3 years on the tree, the Torah used the word Arloso, with the extra vav at the end, and ain done in orlaso tama me orlaso she'ena tama. But in the psukim that you're quoting, whether it's orlas levavchem or orla oznam, there's no extra vav, and therefore it's not part of this gzeirah shava. Omole. So now Rav says, you know, hold on a second. This is not a good situation. First of all, a chutzpah neira, you know, some guy over here is engaging me in a duel here. You know, he's trying to challenge me. He doesn't even know me. But moreover, Rav is in a state of pain. He's got real gastro pains. Mai shmecha. What is your name? Karna. Now, Karna, as you know, is the sharp point on the top of an animal that has a horn. Omalei, so out of pure frustration, I think, otherwise I can't understand this Gemara, Rav says to Karna, Yehei Rava, it should be the will of God, the tepukle Karna biene, that just like your name is Karna, a Karna should come and somehow go into your eye. I mean, that was a curse, and maybe it has something to do with a cataract, I don't know. But in any event, the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra that a horn grew in Karna's eye. So that the curse of Rav, because Rav was in such pain, actually came to fruition. And that's only half of the story. Listen to the second half of the story. Lisof, at the end, Eile Shmuel Lebeisei, when Shmuel meets Rav, possibly for the first time, Shmuel was a great physician, and he knew that Rav was suffering from the stomach ailment, that he knew from the river, if you remember. Ochle nama de sa'ari v'kosa d'arsana. So Shmuel knew exactly which kind of food and drink to give him so that he could clean out his system. Rav would clean out his system. He would have some sort of a diarrhea, right? He would take this pico stuff that I just took. Anyway, the Ashkie Shikra. So he gave him, number one, barley, bread that was made out of barley. Number two, he gave some sort of a cooked fish. And this is fish that's made with fats and flours. It's fried fish. And he gave him beer to drink. But one problem, that's very nice. You give him a diuretic, but lo achve le besakise. But he didn't show him where the latrine is. And this perhaps was part of Shmuel's medicinal therapeutic knowledge, ki hechi de lishtal shel, because if you keep it in a little bit longer, it's going to come out in one flow. And Rav is in a state of pain, as we said before. Layit Rav v'yomar. Rav actually curses Shmuel. this is his best partner in life to be, and he curses him. The Amar, and he says, Man de mitzaron, whoever's causing me to suffer, because he's not showing me where the bathroom is, lo look me le bone. He should not have sons that would survive him. V'chein hava. And so it was. Shmuel had daughters, and he had no sons. Now I'm going to read to you a footnote here. In the English translation, he writes that Rav issued this curse because he did not know that this treatment was really intended as a cure. And later on he found out that Shmuel sought to cure him, and everything that he was giving him was part of a process of therapy. And he realized that his curse was not founded. But nevertheless, his curse, even when it was done inadvertently, is a curse. And because Rav felt he owed it to Shmuel, he owed him one, because there was no justification for him to give Shmuel that curse, he gave Shmuel all the respect in the world, even though he was much greater than Shmuel. Now, one of the questions that Karna had asked is, where do we do milah? And the Gemara says the following, that kitanoi minayin, there are two different shitot as to what is the source that milah is on the member of the body, of the male body. Minayin lemilah sheba oso makom. And the first opinion in the Tanoim is that which we saw in Rav. Nemar kan or loso, v'nemar lahalan or loso. And malahalon dover shel sepri, afkan dover shel sepri, divrei Rav Yoshia. Okay, I'm not going to review it. We did this already, and we have a long daf today. So Rabbi Nosson Omer, Eino Tzach, I don't need this gzera shava between orloso in circumcision and orloso in the first 3 years of the fruit tree, because Hareu Omer, the Torah says in the parsha of Milah, which is in Lech Lecha, it says, V'orel zachar asher lo yimol es besar orloso. It mentions the zachar. So the word orel has something to do with a zachar. If we put those two words together, then it means, makom shenikar bein zachrus linakrus, that the orel and the orla, which has to be circumcised, is in the organ that differentiates between a male and a female. That's called orel zachar. Okay, now we get back to tefillin. As we said before, tefillin have to be written on a parchment. The parchment is a hide, and that hide is taken from a kosher animal. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a brisa, kosvin tefillin al gabi or behema tahora, v'al gabi or chaya tahora, so that we can write tefillin on the hides of a kosher animal, of a kosher chaya, and also on a kosher bird. With regard to fish, if you remember, we had a question, because sometimes it's got a putrid smell. But then, the Brisa tells me, Al gabi or nevelos utrefos shelahem. So imagine you have a kosher animal, and it dies without shechita, that's called a nevela. Or, it has a puncture to one of its vital organs, that's called a treif. It's not going to live more than 12 months. And eventually, it dies, or you shecht it matters not. And the law is that the Torah says you're not allowed to eat that, you're not allowed to eat that nevela or that treifa. But the animal itself, had it been shechted, was a kosher species. And the Bryce is telling me that even if the kosher animal died without shechita or was a trefa, you're allowed to take off, flay its hide, use its hide to make parchment and write tefillin on it. And we're going to talk about this. How do we know this? But the rest of the Bryce is going to teach us what's called halacha Moshe Misinai, something that we learn from the oral tradition dating back to Moshe at Har Sinai. Number one, nichrachos b'si'aron. The tefillin have to be wrapped in the hair of a kosher species. Number two, nitparos begidin, begidon. They have to be sewn with the gidim, the sinews of a kosher animal. And that's halacha l'Moshe b'Sinai, shatfilin nichrochos b'si'orim v'nitparos b'gidim. The Braisa then tells us, aval ein kosvin lo agabi or beim tmeya v'lo agabi or chaya tmeya. However, you're not allowed to write tefillin on the hides of a non-kosher animal. And v'eino tzarech lomar al gabi or nevela utrefa shalom. And how much more so, if the non-kosher animal dies, you're not allowed to take its hide and use it for making parchment for tefillin. V'ein nechrochin b'sa'aron v'ein itparos begidin. Begidon. You cannot make tefillin out of the hair. You cannot wrap the tefillin out of the hair of a non-kosher species. And you cannot sew the tefillin with the sinews of a non-kosher species. The Braisa now reports a question between a Baitusi. The Baitusim were those who denied Torah Shebaal Peh, and they tried to fight the oral tradition. Together with the Tzdukim, there were two buddies who heard a shiur from Antignos, each socho, which is a Mishnah in Avos, that a person should fulfill the Torah and don't expect any reward for it. They understood that there's no reward for Torah, for observing the mitzvah. So they had respect for the written Torah, but they went off the derech, as you'd say, and they rejected the Torah Shebaal Peh. So Shal Zusheila Shal by Tusi Echad Es Rabbi Yoshua Garsi. Says Rabbi Yeshua comes from a place called Garsi, and this was the question that this Baitusi asked him. Minayin she'ein kosvin tefillin al or behemat mea. How do we know that the Torah requires a kosher animal to create a parchment from its hide, and only a kosher animal, but not a non-kosher animal? And if you notice in the Braisa, the Braisa does not refer to this as halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai, so you must have derived it from the Torah itself. So Rabbi Yeshua responds, "Dichsiv l'man tia Torah Hashem b'ficha, davar amuta b'ficha." The Torah says that the tefillin should have the Torah on it, and it should be b'ficha. And this teaches us that it has to come from an animal that you could eat. Elameata, according to your logic, says this by Tusi, al gabi or nevelus utrefas al yikosevu. Why does the Braisa tell us that even if this kosher animal dies without shchita, or it's a trefa, you're allowed to use its hide for parchment of tefillin? After all, you can't eat this nevela. Amalo, emshol lecha mashal. Now, I suspect that this mashal, this analogy that is going to be presented here by Rabbi Yeshua to respond to the Baitusi, is kind of a way of pushing him off. Meaning, he's going to give him some sort of a quasi-philosophical explanation. But really, he means a halachic category. Lemar dover dover, what is this similar to? Shnei b'nei adam nischayvu hariga l'malchus. Two people were sentenced to death by the government. Echad harago melech. One was actually executed by the king himself. The echad harago ispak litar. He was the executioner. Eizem hem mishubach. Which one is superior? The omer zesh harago melech. The one who was killed by the king himself. He doesn't tell you exactly why he is superior. In any event, Hevi Omer Zeh Sharago Melech. This is a mashal for Nevelus and Trefus. That if an animal that's kosher is shechted, so that requires a human intervention. If an animal is a Nevela or a Trefa, means it died without the human intervention, or is about to die, and it was killed, therefore, at the hands of the king himself, the Melech Malchei Amloch. So therefore, if the skins of an animal, a kosher animal that was shechted, are kosher for tefillin, then how much more so than a velu trefa? Basically, in halachic categories, I think what Rabbi Yeshua is responding to is by Tusi, except that he had to say it in a way that by Tusi could possibly understand it, is that the law of menamuta beficha doesn't mean that this hide belongs to a piece of meat that I can eat, but rather this hide belongs to a species of kosher animals. And the fact that it's nevela trefa, that itself does not undermine the fact that it's a kosher species, and that's good enough for tefillin menamuta beficha. Elameata. So the Baitusi again continues to barrage Rabbi Yeshua. He says, Ye'ochelu. Well, if you're telling me based on this Kal Vachomer that something that shechted is inferior to something that dies at the hands of God, so if you have a kosher species, we should be able to eat the meat even without shechita. Amar Lea Torah, Amar Lo Sochlu Kol Nevela, Ve'ad Amet Ye'cholu. And even you agree that you accept the Torah Shebichsav, and it says explicitly in the written Torah, we don't eat any Nevela, and now you're telling me that we could eat the Nevela. Amar Le, he says to him, Klaus, Kolos, which is bravo. So he even respected, you know, Rabbi Yeshua. The Mishnah tells us about preparing a salt water. Now, when you salt the water, it's really done for purposes of what's called kavush. Kavush means when you soak something in salt water for a long time, let's say a vegetable or fish or something, it becomes what we call in our language pickled. And pickling on Shabbos is prohibited. And therefore, ein osin hilmi b'Shabbos. The Mishnah says that if you prepare this mixture of salt and water on Shabbos, then obviously you're doing it for chol. You're doing it for tomorrow, for Sunday. And we're not allowed to prepare for Sunday. Aval osahu es, here we turn to Daf Kufches Amid Beis, aval osahu es mea melach, however he's allowed to prepare salt water, l'tocha tavshil, and add it to the cooked food. V'tovo ben pito, v'nosein l'tocha tavshil. He can dip his bread into salt water, or he can add it to cooked food. So I don't get it. Are you allowed to make salt water on Shabbos or not? So that's what we're going to see. And Rabbi Yossi is also going to oppose this. Omar Rabbi Yossi, hello, who hilmi bein meruba bein muat. As if to say, you're telling me that you're allowed to prepare salt water, maybe it's a smaller volume. Well, you admit to me that hilmi, which is a larger volume, you're not allowed to prepare that salt water in a larger volume. So what's the difference between the two? I don't care whether you're preparing a small volume or a larger volume. The halacha should be identical. V'elu hein mei melech hamutarim. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, under what circumstance will I allow you to prepare salt water? Only if nosein shemen lechatchila l'toch hamayim or l'toch hamelach. Only if you do it in an unusual way, instead of adding the salt into the water or the water into the salt, you add oil into the water and then you add the salt, or you add oil into the salt and then you add the water. But it's got to be done in an unusual sequence. Maika Omar. The Gemara wants to understand what's the difference of the Tanakama between salt water and hilmi, meaning hilmi is basically salt water. And yet you prohibit hilmi, but you allow mei melach. What's the difference? Om Rabbi Yudom Shmuel, Hochi Kamer. This is what the Tanakhama is saying. Ein osim mei melach merubim. If you make a large quantity of salt water, that becomes hilmi, and that's prohibited. Aval osu mei melach mu'atim. But a small quantity of salt water is permissible. Why? Because it's going to be used for Shabbos, and you're not preparing it for Sunday. So we don't allow preparing salt water for Sunday, so that on Sunday he's going to pickle his vegetables in the salt water. No, no, no. We're going to allow you to prepare salt water so that you can dip your bread into the salt water on Shabbos, or you could add it to the tavshil. Rabbi Yossi, v'alohu hilmi bein merubim bein muatim. Rabbi Yossi is not willing to accept the distinction between a large volume of salt water and a small one. Iboilahu, the Gemara doesn't understand Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi lesar o lahatir. when Rabbi Yossi says he doesn't accept a distinction between a large quantity and a small one, is he saying that in both cases it's mutter to prepare salt water, or is he saying it's in both cases it's asur? And here we have machlokas. Om Rabbi Yehuda lahatir. I'm going to prove to you that what Rabbi Yossi meant to say was that both large quantities and small quantities are permissible. How do I know this? Midalok tani Rabbi Yossi oser. If Rabbi Yossi was disagreeing with the Chachamim in the case of a small quantity of Mei Melach, and he prohibits it should have said, quote, Rabbi Yossi oser. Amalei Rabbi can't accept this interpretation of Rabbi Yehuda of Rabbi Yossi. Hamidik tani sefer. What does Rabbi Yossi say in the next part of his sentence, of his argument against the Chachamim? He says, Elu hein Mei Melach hamutarim. Under what circumstances are we going to permit you to prepare salt water on Shabbos? Only if you add the oil first. Or the oil to the salt, or the oil to the water. Michlal, you see clearly, the Rabbi Yossi lesser. Rabbi Yossi is coming to say that salt water itself without the addition of oil is prohibited, whether it's a small amount or it's a large amount. Eloma Rabba lesser. Rabbi Yossi rather holds that you're not allowed to make salt water on Shabbos, whether it's a large volume or even a small volume. And the reason for that is if we allow you to make a small volume, then next Shabbos you're going to make a large volume. You're already prepared for Sunday because you want to pickle your fish. V'chein omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan also agrees with Rabba lesser, that Rabbi Yossi came to prohibit it in both cases. Tanya Nami Yochi, we also have a brisa to support this view. Ein osim mei melech merubim. You're not allowed to prepare a large quantity of salt water. This is the Tanakama. This is not Rabbi Yossi. We'll see Rabbi Yossi in a minute. Lases letoch hakvashim shevetoch gistera. They used to use a vessel, it was sort of like a broken vessel, for kavush, for purposes of putting salt water and then adding a fish or a vegetable to pickle it. Now, if he prepares on Shabbos a large quantity of salt water, then we know, or at least it appears, that he is already preparing for Sunday. Aval osu mei melech mu'atim. But on Shabbos, we're going to allow him to prepare a small quantity of salt water, v'yochel ben pito v'nosein l'toch ha'tavshil, and he could use it during the course of Shabbos for dipping his bread and cooking and his cooked food. Amar Rabbi Yossi, v'chi mipnei shalolu merubim v'alolu mu'atim, halolu asurim v'alolu mutarim. Are you going to make this distinction in the volume of the salt water, and this volume is too large and therefore it's asur, but if it's small, then it's mutter? Is Yomru, people going to say, well, you know what? These two activities, you know, whether he's adding salt to a large volume or to a small volume, they're identical. In terms of Hilchas Melech Shabbos, in terms of what he's creating on Shabbos, so people are going to say, wait a minute, Melacha Meruba Asura, but Melacha Mu'etes Muteres? They're going to come to extrapolate from this distinction that if I do a Melacha only with a small amount, then that's okay. And we have learned on many occasions that the amount that you chayev for in Melech Shabbos is very minimum. Whether it's a kezayis, whether it's a krogeres, whether it's a mashu in many melachas. So we don't want to take a risk and present it to the people as if to say whether it's a melacha that's prohibited on Shabbos depends upon the quantity, it's small or large. El elu v'elu asurinim. The Brisa records Rabbi Yossi is saying that even in the case of a small amount, it's forbidden to prepare the salt water, like we saw in Rama and Rabbi Yochanan. V'elu hein mei melech hamutarim. But here's the case of salt water that can allow you to prepare on Shabbos. No sein shemen u'melech o shemen u'mayim. We're going to allow you to add shemen into the equation, but it will provide on the condition shelo yitein mayim u'melach lechatchila. You shouldn't start the preparation by putting water and salt together, mixing them together. That already looks like he's preparing something for pickling on Sunday. But if he puts the oil in, that makes it clear that he's only doing it for purposes of immediate use on Shabbos. Azin Tznon V'Yesrok Simon. This is a mnemonic device for the following. So we're going to have something called azin, which is a radish that's very strong, and an esrog, which we're going to see is something that's very hard to digest. Tani, Rabbi Yehuda bar Chaviva, we have a brice in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. Ein osim me melach azin. We don't make very strong salt water. My me melach azin. What is this strong salt water? And it would seem that this statement of strong salt water has nothing to do with Shabbos. It has to do with health. In any event, what makes it strong? My me melech azin. Rabbi Rabbi Yossi bar Abba the Amit Ravai kol sheha beitza tsofa bahen. That if you put an egg on top of this salt water, it will float on top of the water. Which means that the water is so saturated with salt, it becomes very dense, denser than an egg. And such a strong mixture may not be concocted even in small qualities. And the reason is, it's typical of pickling fish, of what you use for pickling fish. And that's the Meiri. So obviously the Meiri understood that this discussion about adding too much salt and why it's prohibited is because it looks like he's preparing for Sunday. So it's a Shabbos halacha. It's not a health halacha. Vekama, can you tell me exactly how thick and dense this mixture of salt is when you add too much salt, such that the beitza will float on top? Omer Abaye, trei tilsei milcha v'tilsei maya. If you have 2/3 of salt and 1/3 of water, then the salt overwhelms the water, and that's great for pickling, but it's not something that we could permit on Shabbos because the egg would float on the top of the surface. L'may avdalei, why would a person make such a mixture? Omar avi abba, abo, limur muryasa. Muryasa apparently is pickling fish. That if you want to pickle a fish, then you put it in something that's very heavily salted. Now salt, okay, salt, just 1 second, I'm sorry. Right. Tani Rabbi Yehuda bar Chaviva, ein molchim tznonu beitza b'Shabbos. We're not allowed to salt a radish or an egg on Shabbos. What it means is that if he has a quantity of eggs or fish, and he wants to salt all of them, or I'm sorry, egg or radish, and he wants to salt all of them in one fell swoop, so he has 3 or 4 pieces together, and once he salts them, that becomes similar to meleches ma'abed, to tanning hides. And that's prohibited on Shabbos. Rav Chizkia Mishmeda Bayomar, Tznon Asur Ubeitza Muteres. We prohibit salting a radish, but not an egg. In other words, according to Abaye, the prohibition applies only to foods that are improved by the salt, like radish, because it's very sharp. So you add salt, it takes off some of the harshness. But in the case of eggs, salt doesn't really add much to the egg. So in the case of tanning, when you salt the hide, that has a profound impact on the hide. So it's meleches ma'avid. And this is going to be similar to meleches ma'avid in the case of a radish. Omer Rav Nachman, meresh avi melachna pulga. Initially I used to salt radishes on Shabbos. Amina afsudei kom afsidalei. He thought that he's not doing a tikkun, he's not improving it, which would make it similar to ma'abed, which is salting, and therefore it's mutter. The Omer Shmuel, but Shmuel said that pugla churfei ma'ali. Right, Shmuel was a great doctor, and he said that the radish, the sharpness of a radish, is very healthy, and therefore if you add salt that's going to spoil the radish. Not improve it, but spoil it. That's what I thought based on the statement of Shmuel, and therefore I concluded that salting a radish is mutter on Shabbos. I'm not doing any tikkun. I'm not improving it. On the contrary, the opposite is true. But kevan de shamina laha. But once I heard the following statement to Chiyosa Ulo, when Ulo came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Omar, and he declared, b'marava malchi kishrei kishrei. In Eretz Yisrael, which is called Ma'arava, the West, they salt heaps and heaps of radishes. So then I understood from Ula that salting a radish is a good thing, it's beneficial, and therefore it should be also on Shabbos because you improve the radish. And therefore, Mimlech lo malachna, I desist from salting radishes on Shabbos. Tibule vadi metablina. But if I dip the radish into salt to improve the taste, then that's already tolchidei achila. That's not a separate salting process, you know, where you have a bunch of radishes and you salt them. But rather you dip them into the salt one at a time. That's called tolchidei achila. That's not similar at all to meleches ma'abed, to tanning, because in the case of meleches ma'abed, we salt a large hide, not small little pieces of hide at once, you know, one at a time. Tani Rabbi Yehuda bar Chaviva, esrog tznon ubeitza, ilmole kliposav achitzoni yotzim v'nei be'ayim li'olam. Einom yotzim v'nei be'ayim li'olam. There are three foods that could really be very, very hard to digest, except for the fact that there's kliposan hachitzona. So they have this klipa, this outer husk that covers them, and that's what makes it easier to digest. Otherwise, the body could not successfully digest. So the radish has a husk, the esrog has a peel, the egg has the white on the outside of the yellow, and this is going to make it possible to digest these very heavy, heavy foods. Kiyosu Rav Dimi came to Babel from Eretz Yisrael, and he said, Omar me olam lo tova gavra b'yamastom. No human being ever drowned in the sea of stone because it's so salty that you float to the surface. Omar Rav Yosef, hafucha stom, v'afucha mila, gavra hu delo tova, kshura tova. Are you telling me that stone, which was turned upside down, and therefore hafucha mila, when Rav Dimi described stone, he turned it upside down? Why? Because he said a human being would not drown in the sea of stone, implying that a piece of wood would sink to the bottom of the Dead Sea, and that's not true. Amalei Abaye, no. Abai tells Rav Yosef, you misinterpreted Rav Dimi's statement. Lo mi boikomer, he didn't have to tell you that a kshura, a piece of wood, would certainly float to the surface. Dafilu bechol memos shaba'olam lo tova. When you put a piece of wood on any sea or any ocean, it floats to the top. So for sure it would not sink in the case of Yamamelach. El afilu gavra. But you might think that a human being who never tava b'chol memos shabolim, he could sink to the bottom of any body of water in the is biyam the stomlo tava. I want to tell you that there's one body of water where he will absolutely not drown. He was not sink to the bottom, and that's Yam HaMelech. L'may nafkimina, what is this whole discussion relevant to? What do we have to know? I mean, we were talking about salting, and now all of a sudden we talk about the salty Dead Sea. Ki hada ravin. The practical nafkemina is the case of ravin. Davi shokil v'yazal achorei d'Rabbi Yirmiyah. He was walking behind Rabbi Yirmiyah. Aguda d'yama d'stom, on the bank of the Yama Melach. Omar lei, he asks Rabbi Yirmiyah the following question. Ma'u l'mimshe mehani maya b'shabsa. Can I wash my body in the water of the Yam HaMelach on Shabbos? And the question is, since a lot of people will bathe in Yam HaMelech for medicinal purposes, is this included under the Gzeres Chachomim that prohibits refuah on Shabbos? Amar Le Shapir Dom Yerlat. Ma'u Lememetz Ula Miftach. When I wash in the water, am I allowed to close my eyes and open them to allow water into the eyes? Apparently, some limited amount of salt water could be beneficial for the eyes. I don't know if any ophthalmologist would agree with that, but that's what it seems to be here, if I read this correctly. Amalei Rav Yirmi responded, Lo Zulo Shavati, I don't know, I don't have an answer, I never heard of it. Keyotzi Ba Shavati, but I heard something similar. The Amar Rav Zera, Zimnin Amalei Mishmei Rav Masna, Zimnin Amalei Mishmei Demar Ukva, Travayu Mishmei Davula Shmuel, it all goes back to the father of Shmuel the Levi, the Amrin, and they say, Chad Omar, one says, Yayin besocha ayin asur, wine in the eye is forbidden, that's considered therapeutic, and it comes under the medical procedure, which is also in Shabbos, al-gava ayin, but if he puts it on top of his eye, and it drips down into his eye from when he blinks, that's already permissible. Al-gava ayin mutter. Okay? Because, you know, you could wash yourself with wine. So he's not necessarily doing it for a therapeutic purpose. Chad Omar, others say, Rok tofel afilo agava ayin asur. Raw saliva, even above the eye, is forbidden. Because it seems that saliva has curative properties. And no one would use it to wash himself. So it's obvious that he's using it for a food. Tistayim, I'll prove to you, the avua de Shmuel, who the Omar, Yayin besocha ayin osir. It's the father of Shmuel who told us that you're not allowed to put wine inside the eye, but only on top of the eye. Al gav ha'ayin mutter. Be the Omar Shmuel from the statement of Shmuel that says, Shora adam pito b'yayin, a person could take his bread and soak it in wine, v'nosna al gav ha'ayin b'shabbos, and he can put it on his eye on Shabbos. And apparently from that you see that there is some sort of a medicinal treatment over here that would be asur, if not for the fact that he dipped his bread into the wine, and therefore it looks like he's using the bread that's absorbed with wine as a compress, but he's not necessarily using it for medicinal purpose. Shan mida le miman. And from whence and from whom did Shmuel hear this from? Lav de Shamidi Le Miavua, he probably heard it from his father. Ulitaimech, according to your reasoning, how do we explain Hadi Omer Shmuel? Rok tofel afilo agava ayin asur, that this saliva, you're not allowed to even put it on top of the eye, de Shamidi Le Miman. So you're going to tell me that Shmuel must have heard this from his father, Elim de Shmuel Le Miavua, Elo Levi velo chada Omer. Right, Levi, he didn't say one of these laws. We're not sure which of the one he didn't say. Elachad Shmuel Levi Avua, v'chad Shmuel Levi Levi. So the answer is, we're going to have to say that Shmuel heard one law from his father, one law he heard from Levi, and Lo Yadina, we don't know, Chad Me Avua, which one he heard from his father, which one he heard from Levi. Omar Mar Ukva Omar Shmuel. Mar Ukva says the name is Shmuel. Shora Odom Kilorin Mi Erev Shabbos. So Kilorin is some sort of a paste that was used as an eye remedy back in the time of the Gemara. And the Gemara never tells us exactly what the ingredients were, but here we get the impression that it was a mixture of wine, water, and other liquids, and it made a certain paste that was healthy for the eye. And the Gemara says that you're allowed to make this concoction, this kilorin, but it's got to be made on Erev Shabbos, and then no seina al gabi einov b'Shabbos. So to prepare it on Shabbos, that's forbidden. Apparently that's a kind of a malacha when he does this soaking and so forth, but on Shabbos he can use it. The Eino Choshesh. And he doesn't have to worry about violating the Shabbos. Why not? I mean, L'chora, this seems to be a medicinal treatment, and that's prohibited on Shabbos. So the answer is that since he prepared this before Shabbos, we're not afraid that he'll make a mistake and assume that you can grind medicine on Shabbos. The whole prohibition of using medicines, because somebody might come to grind the various herbs and so forth. But here, if he makes it on Erev Shabbos, that's okay. So the Gemara now adds another comment. Bar Levoi Havikoi Kamid Mar Ukva, he was in the presence of Maruk, Chazia Davi Mayitz Uposach. So Mar Ukva saw that Bar Levi was closing and opening his eyes as he was using this paste. Omole Kuli Hai Vadi Lo Shora Mar Shmuel. To open and close your eyes, to get the paste into the eyes, even Shmuel did not permit it. Because Shmuel only permits it if you do it in a way that it's not obvious that you're involved in a medical procedure. But if it becomes absolutely evident that he's doing it for medical purposes, then even Shmuel would prohibit it. Finally, Sholach Le Rabbi Yanai Lemar Ukva, Lishader Lon Mar Mehanach Kilorin Demar Shmuel. Can you send us a sampling of the Kilorin that was prepared by Shmuel so we could use it for benefiting our eyes as a medicinal paste, and send us a sampling, Sholach Le. So Mar Ukva responded to Rav Yanai, and he said, Shadure Mishadrin Alecha, I'll certainly send them to you. Delo Tematzar Ayin, and I don't want you to think I'm stingy, and I want to keep it for myself, I want to share it with you. Ella Hachi Amar Shmuel, but you should know that this is what Shmuel said. Tova tipas tzonen shachris urchitzas yodai v'raglayim v'chamin v'arvis. Mikol kilurin shabola. I know that you don't have access to this mixture called kilurin, but there's other things that are even better than kilurin, which you can take care of on yourself. Take a drop of cold water and put it in your eyes in the morning, wash your hands and your feet in the evening in warm water, and that washing of your eyes with cold water in the morning and with warm water your hands and your feet in the evening is better than all the kilorin in the world. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learned this in a Braisa, Omrab Muna, Ramona, Mishum, Rab Yehuda, Tova, it's great, Tipas Sonein, a little bit of a drop of cold water in the eye, Shachris in the morning, Urechitzas Yadai Raglaim Arvis, and to wash your hands in warm water, Mikol Kilurin Sheba Olam. Huhaya Omer, Rabbi Mona used to say, Yad La'ayin Tikotzeitz. If you put a hand into your eye, such a hand should be cut off. In other words, the hand is full of germs, and if you put it into your eyes, then that can be very dangerous for your eyes. Yad lechotam tikotzeitz, and put your finger in your nose, that's also very unhealthy. Yad lepeh tikotzeitz, putting your hands into your mouth, is also very unhealthy. And this has to do with someone who didn't wash his hands. And the Gemara says that there's something called a ruach ra on your hands in the morning. And therefore you should be very careful not to put that into your mouth. Yad la'ozan tikotzeitz. And a hand that was put into the ear should be cut off. Apparently this ruach ra could affect your ability to hear. Yad l'chasuda tikotzeitz. And a hand that's put into a lancet puncture is also very dangerous. And this has to do with what's called hakozas dam, right? They used to puncture the capillaries and remove blood. And if you put your hand inside that opening, that's very dangerous. You could get germs and you can contract some sort of blood disease. Yadli amati kotzeitz, and the ama is the male organ, and yad lefi tabas tikotes, putting a hand into the anal opening, is also very dangerous. And finally, yad legigas, putting a hand into a barrel of wine or beer, tikotes, that's also very unhealthy. So we cannot touch the wound of bloodletting before he washes his hands in the morning, and that could be again an issue of the ruach ra that's shoral al yodav on his hands. And then we said that you're not allowed to put your hand in touch your private parts before you wash your hands. And again, the ruach ra could somehow do damage to the member of that member of your body if you touch it with biyad. Now, it could be that the Braisa is telling me that one should not wash, he shouldn't touch any member of at any time of the day. In other words, that sexual organ should not be touched any time of the day, even after he washes his hands, because that could lead to a seminal emission. You know, he might arouse himself. And in general, there's a braisa quoted in Nida Daf Yud Gimel that a person should not extend his hand towards his private parts. And it's possible that the word tikotzeitz here, his hand should be cut off, is used in our Gemara because of the Gemara in Masechta Nida. Okay, now, we spoke also about yad lepi tabas tikotzeitz in the anal opening, and the braisa doesn't refer to touching before washing, but rather it means that if one touches his anus any time of the day, his hand should be cut off so that it does not subsequently touch his eye or his ear if he doesn't wash his hands properly after he comes in contact with his anal opening. Alternatively, the braisa might be saying, do not rub the anus frequently because he might cause hemorrhoids to develop. So it's a pure health recommendation. And according to some Mefarshim, the braisa is referring to touching his anus even delicately before washing his hands in the morning, because the evil ruach ra could cause harm when it comes in contact with any bodily orifice. And finally, the Gigas case, which is on the top here of Kuf Tes, the barrel is the barrel into which we put beer, and if he touches a beer barrel before he washes his hands in the morning, the ruach ra will enter into the beer, and anyone who drinks that beer will be harmed by it. And one should avoid touching any type of food before washing his hands, and that's the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Dalet. The Braisa might be saying that one should not manipulate the beer with his hands even after washing them in the morning, because he might spoil the beer. And what we're up to now is Yad Misama, the hands could cause blindness. Yad Machreshes could cause deafness. Yad Malapolifus, it could cause something called folifus if it touches the mouth or the nose. And this is a foul odor that emanates from the mouth or from the nose. So the Gemara that will start in Mitzvah tomorrow starts with Tanya and Daf Kuf Tes on the second line, Tanya, Rabbi Nosson Omer.